We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 339 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and I've got not one, but two Milan experts with me today to help discuss Frank Kessié, who will be a Barca player come this summer. He is joining on a 6.5 million euro net salary plus add-ons as a free agent with a contract until 2026, which, not to alarm you, is only 4 years away when Kessié will be still 29 years old. Apparently, Xavi called him, so I guess he ignored my request for Boubacar Kamara from Marseille, and unfortunately, maybe Tchouaméni is indeed going to Madrid. But Xavi has been right every other time with these free agent transfers, so I'm going to trust him on this one, and Yaya Toure as well, who also called Kessié to sign for Barcelona. I'm not sure if he's a guy we can trust yet, but we'll have to see. Because to help me discuss Barca's new midfielder is Steve of the Milan Weekly Podcast. Thanks for joining me, Steve.
Thank you very much for having me.
So to get this started, before we really dive deep into the player that he's been for Milan since 2017, since he arrived, I want to talk about his pre-Milan career pretty quickly. The Ivory Coast-born midfielder has played his entire professional career in Italy, coming up with Ivory Coast Club, and anyone from Côte d'Ivoire can correct me on this, but it's Stella Club de Jamais, moving to Atlanta in 2015, still as a teenager, and then a loan move to Cesena got him a season for Atlanta's first team, and a year later, it was already a loan move in 2017 that became a permanent move to Milan in 2019. So what did you know about Kessié before his Milan career? And so the big broad stroke would be, what has he improved upon as a professional in his 214 or so matches for Milan?
Yeah, so for Kessié, I'm not going to lie to everybody. I didn't know him when he played at Ivory Coast. Cesena, I know we followed a little bit because I'm a calcio junkie and I watch a lot of games. You hear different names. You hear, you see some performances that stand out. But his tenure at Atalanta was really what set him apart, right? And he was also, he benefited from Gasperini's system, right? He had fullbacks around him. He was able to, you know, do what he does, recuperate balls, roam free, and, you know, use his strength. But it was brute talent. It was just him using his physical attributes. I think from his time at Atalanta and moving to Milan, we saw him get a little bit more intelligent, stronger. And I'm not going to say better on the ball, but I think he's more confident on the ball.
Well, going back to even again his start at Milan, did he have was it a slow start to his Milan career? And then he kind of evolved into the player we know him as today?
Yeah, so it was tough. You know, like his time at Milan came with a lot of pressure, right? He was coming from Atalanta on this magically put together two-year loan plus obligation to buy from Atalanta. So there was a lot of pressure on him. There was a lot of pressure on the team. There was a lot of uncertainty around the team. So I don't blame him for the slow start. Now, I put myself back when he started at Milan. I was like, wow, what's going on? Like, he can't keep the ball. He's losing the ball. He doesn't look confident. He looks almost lost on the pitch. It was also a little bit to do with his partner in the midfield, right? So, you know, at that time we had Bilia in there, and that wasn't the best transfer ever. So now that I look back on there, he had a pretty rough start at Milan, but he evolved into someone who every coach that had him trusted him. And they trusted him because you saw that the talent was there, you saw that the smarts was there, and you saw that the hard work was there, because he had to work extremely hard to make people forget about the transfer number and how much we paid for him, and forget about his time at Atalanta and concentrate now on the Kessié that's at Milan, because the Atalanta Kessié was surrounded by a system that was maybe shielding a bit of the flaws in his game. And now you come to a Milan who's in rebuilding. We're going to call it rebuilding. It's even embarrassing to say rebuilding. It was a complete, excuse my language, it was a show. So now we see the Frank Kessié evolving into the player that he was supposed to be and was going to probably turn out to be at Atalanta anyways.
Yeah, but before we talk about him with the ball at his feet, I want to talk about the defensive side of the ball. And I've got some numbers here on the pressing, but before we do any of that, I think the eye test immediately tells people, and I think this is what I keep seeing from Kool-Aids who've never watched him, who just tune in for the highlights and the YouTube, you know, check it in, you Google or Google search, YouTube highlights, you know, welcome to Barcelona, of course. So you look at a player like Kessié and see just how strong he is, how much of his game is actually physicality as opposed to how much people might perceive might be his physicality. Because he's not too tall, but he certainly is a strong player. You clearly see that.
Yeah, and look, physicality. For me, watching the game, I grew up with a dad who loved calcio. I played myself. It doesn't look like it to people of the Barcelona podcast, but yes, I played soccer. And I like to watch the game. I like to watch what's happening away from the ball. And that's why Frank Kessié, for me, I've been a huge supporter of him. Even now, I don't want to go in the drama. I appreciate what he did for Milan. He came at a really tough time. But him, the player, just to go back to your question, he's intelligent on when he needs to exert energy. People might see him and perceive him as lazy or not someone who's always in the right spot. But I see him as someone that defensively, he's going to exert the energy that he needs to when he needs to at the right time. And not run around with like a chicken without his head, right? So the smarts of his game and how he's developed in that double pivot, which is a completely different role than what he had at Atalanta, lining up with five midfielders in a 3-5-2, is sometimes you're going to need to be involved in the game and play an important role in the game, but your name's not going to end up in the newspaper. And that's what Barcelona fans have to really pay attention to, because we know, you know, I watch La Liga too. I watch Barcelona fans. They're like Milan fans. They're very demanding. But someone like Kessié won't show you stats. You could have all the numbers that you want, but the real and true fan that will watch him and appreciate what he does will see him and see what he does off the ball, man marking, being in the right spot. There's no real stats for that.
Well, it sounds like you've actually answered my next question already, because as far as pressing goes, that's the next thing I want to talk about, because with Xavi's system, Barcelona are pressing a lot higher up the field. They're pressing with a bit more intensity and more as a unit. He individually is in the 27th percentile of pressures per game, which is not high, obviously. But the eye test of what, again, the limit of what I've seen him and the few times I've watched Milan this year, tell me, at least seeing, is that he's better than that. That individually, yeah, his ability to move with players and track players individually, and even what he can do individually for you, I've seen that he can use his athleticism to close down one man quickly who has the ball, or just stick with his man and deny his man to turn, which again, there's no stat for that, you know, denial of turn on the ball. There's no stat of denial to your guy getting a pass as a progressive pass, 15, 20 yards, right? And denying that ball. So do you think, looking forward to his time at Barca, do you think his pressing abilities are better utilized when the game plan says to be conservative, which again is not how Barca wants to press or play with the ball? They want to obviously get the ball back as fast as possible. Or when the game plan says go all out, as Barca will likely try to utilize him with. Do you think it's going to support him or not?
I think it's going to support him. And I think it's going to support him because at Milan, he's been such a foundation in that midfield. He's always been there. And when we haven't had him, it's been very hard. Before the acquisition of Tonali, it was very hard to replace him. It was very hard to find, you know, if Frank Kessie gets hurt, what are we going to do? Now, things have changed. And again, his style of play has changed. And the double pivot at Milan has changed. And their pressing has changed too. But, you know, the Italian game is all about, it is about pressing, but it's calculated pressing. So that's why that stat is a bit, you know, it's hard to talk on that stat. But he's constantly running around. He's constantly doing it. He's constantly having the ball on his foot. He might not have that at Barcelona. So he'll have more energy and he'll have a more defined role in the Barcelona style pressing that's going to probably help him moving forward. But like we said, and again, I'm like vice president of the Frank Kessie fan club. And you won't see that. It's going to be hard to see it because there's not really a lot of stats that are going to make it fluffy. I like to call it those fluffy stats. Mm-hmm. The 900 passes that Barcelona is going to do, well, he's going to have 100 of them, and they're going to be all either sideways or negative because they don't need him to be on the ball. They have other players that are supposed to be on the ball. Milan needed him to be on the ball because we had no one else. Mm-hmm. So he had to recuperate balls and be some sort of a distributor. So I'm pretty sure you're going to have a question on goal scoring and stuff later. If you don't, we'll talk about that because that's probably...
I want to go in the opposite direction. I want to head all the way back because when he needs to drop in and aid with buildup as a third center back or step in for a fullback when the fullback bombs forward, a la Jordi Alba or Sergino Dest on the right side, how much do you trust him and how much have you trusted him in those situations when he drops
100%. In? 100%. He's, for Milan, he's played at center back. When we had injury problems, he plays on the same side as Theo Hernandez. So on the left-hand side, once Theo runs wild, there's always someone back there. And it's usually Frank Kessie. And he's going to, you know, he switches. He alternates with Bennacer, where they will, shift down into the center back position and start and build play from the center back. So Barcelona fans have nothing to worry about that. He's very responsible for that. He will make a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes, but I have no problem with that. My problem is once you take me up the pitch.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Well, we're going to go all the way up to Fitch to the penalty spot before we talk about open play. He has scored 36 goals in his time at Milan, quite a few of them coming at the penalty spot. What makes him such a great PK taker? And I ask that because Messi was the guy for so long for Barca. Memphis Depay seems to be one of the options, but Ferran Torres can take them. Aubameyang could take them. There's a number of guys that could take that over. But it seems like, just numerically, that Kessié is, I mean, that's a specialty of his.
Yeah, it has always been a specialty of his. He was, you know, he's very good at taking spot kicks. I think it's just the calmness of it. It's the run-up. Some people don't like the run-up. I'm more of a soccer purist. I just want to run up to the ball and, you know, and smash it. And I think that's when he's taking them well, that's what he's doing. When he starts to try to second guess himself, that's when he starts to miss. And, you know, he starts to give some tells to the keeper for them to try to stop them. And he's missed a couple recently. I don't think there's a problem with that. But to all the Barcelona fans, I think he's down in the pecking order of people that are going to be taking spot kicks for Barcelona going forward.
Well, you know, I'm at like a 1996 MLS purist where I think it should be a 40-yard run-up, and then I kid in jest. It would make penalty kicks take forever. I don't want to sit through that. So back to, again, how he might score then and help the attack in that way, where we've seen Xavi's interiors. And before we talk about the position between pivot and interiors and things like that, I want you to avoid that with this question about the goal scoring. But in this hypothetical situation where he is playing as one of the interiors in a 4-3-3 under Xavi, there is moments where he's asking his high interiors. We've seen Pedri, Gabi, and De Jong did it last year, doing it some this year, getting forward, making runs into the box, or shooting from distance. How else, other than the penalty spot, could he pop up and score a goal?
So that's the problem. He's going to be in really dangerous positions. My issue with Kessié, and it's something that I fail to understand why this happens to him all the time. I feel the closer he is to goal, the worse off he is, and the lesser of a chance that you have to score a goal, believe it or not. We've seen him miss, you know, chances, you know, sitters from the 6-yard box. But as he goes further and we go towards the 20-yard box, I think he's confident. I think, you know, it's not going to be the same as what you're seeing at Milan now. If you watch Milan, where it's more, you know, the shot comes second, pass comes first. I think it'll be the same at Barcelona. I don't think that he's going to try. But when he tries, further away that he is from the goal, the better chance you have that he's going to score a goal. He's just really either unlucky or not comfortable in that scorer's position to get those type of goals. And then out of nowhere, you'll get a fantastic strike from inside the 20-yard box that's going to go in. We haven't seen him. Something also with Kessié that's really strange, doesn't really get involved in corner kicks in terms of like being inside the box and getting to the spot in dangerous positions. So you're not going to see goals coming from headers from him. But again, the major message, my message, and why I thank you again for letting me on the Barcelona podcast, because I really like Frank Kessié. I think Barcelona is getting a great player. But the fans are going to need to manage their expectations in terms of what they're going to get from Frank Kessié.
Well, I think the big question, and it's going to be an unanswered question, and one of the reasons why, when I look at that Barcelona midfield, it concerns me that he is not a traditional single pivot defensive midfielder. And those are hard to come by in modern football. There's not a lot of them. The double pivot seems to be where world football is going. And Busquets has just been such the guy at that position for Barca for so long. So moving on from him, it was never going to be easy, but it seems like this signing doesn't necessarily fit that. However, you know, that's a twofold question I ask you. That do you think if Kessié were to be given the keys to that sports car, that is the pivot, the single pivot spot at Barcelona, how would he handle that? And then part two of that is, if that probably isn't the right idea, because as we said, his numbers, his characteristics make him a okay interior, or they characterize him as an interior in Xavi's system, what kind of player would he have to be next to mesh well with in a double pivot? Because my concern looking at it on paper is that he and De Jong are a little bit redundant and don't necessarily complement each other. They may overlap more than complement, just on paper at least.
Yeah, on paper, I gotta agree. They do overlap each other. Giving Kessié the keys, I wouldn't do that. I don't think that's something that he wants. I don't think that's something that he's going to be comfortable in. And I think you're setting him up to fail. But if you give him the co-pilot seat, I think he's going to succeed at Barcelona. But the driver needs to be someone who is very positive in terms of the way he goes forward, very decisive into what he's going to do. And Kessié cleans up after that, right? If he does lose possession, Kessié will regain you that possession. Again, that type of player, like you said, in the single midfielder role, in today's game, we can probably count on one hand how many there is. So double pivot, you need one of each. You need someone who can, you know, control the game and the tempo of the game. And you need someone who is, you know, very strong. And, of course, in today's game, you cannot have just one single talent. Recuperating balls is not the talent that's going to make you a professional. The rest there will be a ton more professionals. Someone who's also, if needed, be comfortable on the ball. But I don't think he wants the keys. And the co-pilot seat is the seat that belongs to Frank Kessié.
And the last question for you, Steve. I think I have seen some criticism, and this might just be frustrated Milan fans with seeing him leave on a free transfer, but his first touch has been called heavy in the past. Do you think he'll struggle where close control is so essential in that midfield? Because it's one thing for Aubameyang, a former Milan player as well, way back in the day, for him to struggle with his first touch as the center forward, but you know, the first touch of a midfielder for Barcelona just needs to be elite. That's really the word I'm looking for. Yeah, it has to be top-shelf elite.
Look, it's not top shelf elite, but again, in the possession game that Barcelona plays and the way they like to move around the ball, I don't see it being an issue just because it's going to be a lot of one touch stuff that's going to go to someone, again, that maestro that controls whoever the Barcelona decides they're going to give the keys to. But a heavy touch, Milan fans getting just a little bit too dramatic over this transfer saga. That's not a heavy touch at all. If that's a heavy touch, then a lot of people have serious problems and should not be playing in the teams that they play if that's a heavy touch.
Well, Steve, you're excellent here. You're from the Milan Weekly podcast, but yeah, where can people find you? I mean, I gave it, but where can people look for you? Let's put it that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, so thank you again for letting me on the Barcelona podcast. It's a great pleasure. I love talking soccer with anybody. You can find us at Twitter at Milan Weekly Pod, YouTube as well, Milan Weekly Podcast on YouTube. You can subscribe there. We talk everything Milan. Every Monday night live at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are from Canada. Imagine we do play soccer in Canada and we talk about Milan and love Milan. And again, it's a community thing, right? Like exactly like you guys in Barca, this all started because of Milan Club Montreal. And, you know, that's a local supporter group here in Montreal for Milan. You see in the back, guys, the jerseys are up. It's not me just making things pretty for Dan and his podcast. It's the real deal.
There's a lot of
My wife sits right next to me. You don't see we hit her desk very well, but she said yes to this. She had no choice to say yes to this decoration, right? So this is what comes up, you know, and what you get from us. And again, us Dan, it's you know, it's a little bit more. I'm gonna give you top credit. You're very straight. The questions are fantastic and really make you think. Talk about Calcio. On Milan Weekly Podcast, we're screaming at everybody. We're yelling. We're complaining. We do what we do to make people enjoy their Monday nights. And Lord knows that after these 2 years that passed, everybody needs a laugh once in a while. So if we could do that for anybody, come and join. Even if you're a Barca fan, trust me, we'll make fun of you too.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Steve.
Thank you.
Joining me now is Luca from the Milan Guys Podcast. Luca, thanks for joining the show.
Dan, it's an absolute honor. I'm ready to talk about the man who snaked Milan.
Yeah, so we are talking, continuing to talk about Frank Kessié, I should say. And, you know, I think what I've been seeing, and you're much more plugged in, obviously, to Milan fans, but what I'm seeing online seems to be some people are sad to see him leave. Some are kind of saying, hey, if you're going to go on a free transfer, in the same way that Kule did the same thing with Dembélé, obviously, they say, if you're going to leave on a free like this and you're going to leave midway through the season when we know you're leaving, don't let the door hit you on the way out. But as far as the way in which he's leaving and Frank Kessié coming to Barcelona, what is the vibe from Milan supporters about him, his time at Milan, and then to seek greener pastures, if you will?
Well, I think it's a 50-50 as well. Like right now, we did a couple polls on our Twitter account, and it was kind of like, you know, you have fans saying on the one side, who cares? Like, you know, let them walk, let them leave. We don't want players like that who want to leave and don't care about the club, don't love the club. Kind of like Ousmane Dembele, kind of like what you said. But then you have the other side saying, basically blaming management, maybe saying we should pay him more. Maybe it's not 50-50. Maybe it's more of like a 60-40 to 60% saying, let him walk. I don't care. I think the way he's leaving, though, the way it's happened and how it's transpired over the last season, the last 8 months, let's say, that's what's going to leave a sour taste in everybody's mouth, I think. In the summertime, so Milan qualified for the Champions League last spring for the first time in 8 years. Kessié was a big part of that. He had a fantastic season last year. Then he played in the Olympics for Ivory Coast in the summer. He had an interview in the Olympics saying he legitimately came out and said, and you can look this up even after if you want, Dan, the actual quote itself is all over the place. He actually came out and said, basically, I love Milan. Like, I love when the fans sing, like they call, like his nickname is the president. I love when the fans call me the president. I love when they chant my name. I love this club. And he said, if it were up to me, I'm not even sure if he said that. I think he said, I want to be here forever. He said, when I get home from the Olympics, I'm going to sort everything out. He came out and like nobody asked him, do you want to be a Milan forever? He literally came out and said those words. That's why you can't take anything a player says for. You always got to take it with a grain of salt. He literally came out and said that. And then he rejects all these offers, you know, with 6 million euros, 6.5 million euros, his agents being greedy, agent fees, keeps rejecting all these offers, according to Italian media, like trusted sources. And then he hasn't really had that great of a season this year. He's had a couple really good games, don't get me wrong. In the Champions League, he had a couple disaster classes, but he also had a couple fantastic performances in the Champions League as well. In the Serie A, he has had a season that he's costed the team a couple of goals, but he's also played very well as of recent. And yeah, it's just kind of a weird situation. But, you know, for all this to happen, like, you know, basically all the reliable sources in Europe saying that he signed the contract, he did his medical, for all that to happen with 8 games left in the season when Milan are currently first place in the table and like trying to win their first major trophies in 2011, it's, you know, as a fan of Barca and as a football fan yourself, you could probably see why that'd be a big conflict of interest for fans, for the team, everything like that.
Well, when you said that about actively saying out loud that I want to stay and leave, it reminds me actually of Kyrie Irving when he promised the Boston Garden for the Boston Celtics that, of course, I'm going to retire a Celtic. Yeah. And we know how that worked out.
You know what? But I think that Kyrie guy, he's a different guy.
I agree. Yeah.
To be nice about it, he's different.
Yeah, I agree.
He's different.
So, yeah, you kind of already answered my question, but I want to follow up to fill in any gaps you may not have missed with this. But how has he fit into a Milan side that is challenging for the Scudetto, as you mentioned? It's been a long time since Milan has captured that trophy and currently leading the pack by 3 points. You know, I kind of think it's a little overdone that it's a distraction for a player. I think players, when they play and they're in a side for a season, they're in that side unless they're a player like Gareth Bale from Real Madrid who is actively trying to get himself out, or especially over the summertime when players are trying to get themselves out of situations during preseason. But when you're in the slog of a season, you know, and it's March and he knows, if anything, I think the comparison continues with Dembele, that there seems to be, I mean, there might be a peace with the player, that the player knows that their future is not in question, that they know they're leaving on a free now that he knows he's going to Barcelona. And I mean, I guess my counter argument would be that you might actually see like a focus and a Frank Kessié that is bought in for the last 2 months of that season. But as you said, this year isn't necessarily the same year that he had last year. Do you think those contract talks and things like that have worn on him this year? And I guess you could talk about what he is on the field as well. I think that's the important part.
Yeah, I think the noise in the back has affected him. Like I said, last year he was incredible. He was a lock in the lineup. And now there's games where we go with Tonali and Bennacer in the midfield and Kessié will get a rest. And people say, we don't need Kessié. We can get a replacement for him. Who cares? Kessie's a good player. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to sit here and say he's a bad player. He does have his moments where he makes a dumb decision. He's strong. We're strong as hell. That's on the ball. He can shoulder anybody in the world. And get take the ball off of them. But I think, I don't know, I picture the locker room and everybody knows that he's leaving. Would you want to fight for a guy to the end with a guy who, you know, he's leaving you guys and it's for free too? He's not even getting sold. It's his choice. He's going somewhere else. And to leave a team that's doing well too, right? Like to leave a team where he gets minutes and they're doing well. Like, it's not like if Milan were in eighth place and struggling all year. Sure. Of course. Like, you want to leave, you want to go upgrade. But right now, a team that's in first place and, you know, challenging for, you know, obviously a Champions League berth again and the Scudetto, that's, you're not really, unless you're leaving for a couple of teams in Europe, that's not an immediate upgrade right now. Right. You know what I mean? So that's, it's just, it's definitely a weird situation, and I'm happy it's going to come to an end because I don't want to hear anything else about his contract talks. But I think his agent played a big role in it too. He wanted a big commission fee, which I think Barca is giving him. I'm not sure exactly what the number is, but I don't know. I think it might affect the locker room, to be honest with you, because if he's confirmed he's gone, he's leaving. Like I said, would you want to fight for someone that is leaving you guys and isn't going to be a part of your future? I don't know. Like, there's some people who are saying for Pioli, our coach, to just not play him. Okay, no problem. You want to leave? Okay, then you're not going to see me. But then it's like, well, we need him to help with that Scudetto charge, right? So it's kind of a very just tough situation for everybody.
Well, other than his time at Milan, yeah, I think putting that behind him and trying to take the player that he is, we'll say last year and this year, the player who at his best, we'll say in theory, right, that he would arrive to Catalonia wanting to play in Catalonia and being whatever his best self might be. There are still some numbers I want to talk to you about here. Should Koulaye be concerned with his lack of progressive passes? Now, I looked it up. He is in the 47th percentile at 3.86 per 90, while Busquets is in the 96th percentile. Let me read that again for you. 47th percentile progressive passing for Kessié, 96th percentile for Busquets with 6.86 per 90. De Jong, Frankie De Jong that is in the 71st percentile with 4.84 per 90, and Pedri is in the 83rd percentile at 5.48. So just an entirely different player, it sounds like, in that aspect of the game. And the question would be, I mean, what are his shortfalls that Xavi will need to improve for the 25-year-old if he's to succeed? And is him being such, or seemingly such, a radically different player as far as, you know, moving the ball forward in progressive areas that doesn't seem to be his game? Is that a skill that you think might be adaptable for him?
Well, it's kind of funny, those numbers you just threw out. I mean, like the Busquets compared to Kessié. But you know what? Kessié and Busquets are like polar opposites of players, midfielders. Kessié has, when he first came to Milan 4 years ago, maybe 4 years ago or 5 years ago, 2017, 2018.
Yeah, 2017. Yeah.
A lot of Milanisti didn't like him. He didn't really fit the style. He played a 4-3-3. And I remember we played with Vincenzo Montella. We played a 3-5-2. And Kessié wasn't as dynamite in a 4-3-3. And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure Xavi plays a 4-3-3 at Barcelona, right?
It's probably going to be a 4-3-3. He's also flirted with the idea of a 3-4-3. But yeah, likely if... I mean, the real question comes down to, and we talked about this earlier, is it going to be a single pivot? Is it going to be a double pivot? And that really becomes the question. But if it's a 4-3-3, it'll be likely Kessié as an interior.
You're right. So if it's a 4-3-3, he actually struggled in that role at Milan. So that's why I don't know about the fit itself. I'm not saying he's not going to do well, because he might, but he's ever since Pioli came in with Milan and changed the formation to a 4-2-3-1, which is the double pivot, Kessié has shined. Like, completely, he's become a different player. He became a player that you literally have to have on the field every minute of every game. He's not a guy who's going to create offense, that much offense. He's going to win the ball. He's tireless. You know, he runs for 90 minutes. He doesn't get injured. He doesn't get injured at all. I think he's only missed like three or four games in his Milan career. So he's not injury prone. He has 10 lungs. He's a beast. He's a beast when it comes to that. In that respect, he's not someone who's going to create goals. Not someone who's going to create offense. He takes penalties. I don't know. He probably will fit in fine with Barcelona, to be completely honest with you. Like, they have some quality now there. I just don't really know exactly how he'll fit and how Xavi's going to make him fit unless they change a formation. Because he wasn't good in a 4-3-3 with Milan. He wasn't that effective. Him going up and down, you know, especially interior, going up, down, he can do it. But in a double pivot, he's been fantastic for us. And maybe now, like, I don't know, the last couple games of the season, if Kessié's going to play, maybe as a Barca fan, should catch a Milan game and kind of see how he is in a double pivot. And you'll probably agree with me saying, okay, yeah, he's really good in a position where to play with someone like Frankie De Jong, someone who, like, it's kind of reminds, like, Tonali, they're kind of, they have similarities, like Bennacer, like more technical midfielders. He really thrives with doing that. And he can also, he can man mark, he can shadow a player too. He's done it before in the derby against Inter. He's done it before. He didn't do that well most recent time, but he's done it in other matches. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see. I will catch some Barcelona games just to see what Kessié does next season, because I've seen him grow as a player and I know his strengths and weaknesses. And I'd like to see if Xavi can kind of help that.
Well, one of the better numbers that I like to see when looking at some of his stuff was a 3.24 progressive passes received per 90, putting him in the 85th percentile in that category, meaning he is putting himself in dangerous spots and he's receiving the ball in dangerous spots. And to tell you where he fits in the 85th percentile there, Pedri is in the 97th percentile in that category, and Ferran Torres is in the 93rd percentile for Barcelona. So what I do, that kind of number can indicate that this is a player that understands how to find space. And in Xavi's systems, whether it's a 4-3-3 or, as I said, hypothetically with that 3-4-3, it's all about finding the open space and not to say formulaically trying to follow the game plan to the letter, but he's going to know that his job is to get the ball out to the wings, let the wingers do their things who are wide on the touchline, and in the middle of that field, whether he's pairing with Pedri or Frenkie de Jong or playing in front of Sergio Busquets or even Nico Gonzalez or Gabi, whoever it may be, his job is going to be to get forward, I think, and not necessarily make those marauding runs, but to find space and continue to shuttle the ball forward to whoever it may be, Ansu Fati or Aubameyang. You know, hopefully, again, Ansu's healthy. We'll have to see with that. And two of the players that Kessié compares to based on some of those metrics I've read out here are Sevilla, even Rakitic. So not Barca Rakitic, but Sevilla Rakitic, who's a bit more involved in the attack, if you will, and then Fede Valverde from Real Madrid, not the one that we saw in El Clasico, but the one that's done well against Barcelona. And I think that makes sense in terms of covering a lot of ground, defending well, and getting forward when asked. Do you have other comparisons? And, you know, for our La Liga base, you know, there's some Premier League watching, I think. There's some La Liga or in Ligue 1 watching, but I don't know how much Serie A watching there is. So if you start to rattle off a ton of different midfielders in Serie A, you might lose us on some of that.
Yeah, I kind of find it hard to find a comparison to Frank Kessié, I'll be honest with you. I really like how you're putting all these numbers. These numbers are interesting. These numbers I don't look at and I haven't seen. So they're interested to see these numbers. I don't know. Kessié is kind of hard to – he's kind of like a – he's not a six. He doesn't play as a six. He's like an eight, but he's also kind of like a seven almost. Like the way he plays is he's a destroyer. Meaning that he runs tirelessly. He's always in the ball. He's always there. He makes himself available for passes. He touches the ball a lot, as you just said, with the stat. That makes sense. Touches the ball a ton, especially in a double pivot. The defenders, so the two center backs, the fullback, especially how Milan play, we build up. It's a really slow build up a lot. Kessié touches it all the time. I'm trying to think, you know, Premier League, maybe La Liga. I'm kind of struggling to find a player who is a direct comparison to Kessié. Like when I look around and let's say in the Premier League, for example, I know a lot of clubs actually wanted Kessié in the Premier League and apparently he rejected them to go to Barca. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. I'd actually like to see, are you looking at like top five European league numbers? Like, are there any players who in the Premier League, for example, who have similar like analytic or, you know, advanced stats to him?
Well, yeah, to go, I mean, to double all the way back to what I had kind of compared in terms of a long piece I did weeks ago about quote-unquote replacing Busquets, Kessié came up as far as one of those technically a candidate, but also technically not. He wasn't very high on my list for the simple fact that his long passing, his progressive passing didn't really pair out where with some of even the other free agents, like even though Tchouaméni, who plays for Monaco, he's not a free agent, but his long passing is much better than Kessié's, as is Maxence Caclet's, who plays for Lyon. His long passing is much, much better. And then Boubacar Kamara, whose long passing is much better. So those are just three names right off the top for you that I thought would be a quote-unquote better replacement for Busquets in a single pivot. And I think again, I think you and, you know, and even Barca supporters themselves and me looking at the player and of what, you know, limited of what I've watched him, of him is only maybe 4 to 5, 6 matches. If anything, actually, I saw arguably more of him when he played for Atalanta than I have for Milan, oddly enough, even though he was only there for a hot minute. I just happened to that season catch a bunch of Serie A when he was on the way up, but he was still so young at the time. But
he's versatile. He's versatile too, eh? Like he can play. He actually started a little bit. He played a little bit of center back at Atalanta, and a couple games, a couple years ago, not recently, he actually filled in as a center back when we were in emergency with injury or something like that. He actually filled in, like, very versatile. Like, and he runs tirelessly, so Barca fans are gonna love him for that.
Mm-hmm.
Does chase around his first touch sometimes. That's probably one of his big weaknesses. That's kind of one of the things that piss off Milanisti, Milan fans sometimes, but I'm just, you know, as you were talking too, I'm just trying to think of a good comparison. I just don't have a player who's exactly like him.
Well, what I can promise you is because Yaya Toure was the one who got on the phone along with Xavi to try to convince him to come to Barcelona, I guarantee you the first time he has a fantastic match for Barca, he's going to be compared to Yaya Toure. That's my guarantee. Probably. That's the very first thing that's going to happen.
He's from Ivory Coast. It makes sense. It's a perfect match, right?
Or
in the same country.
Or if he does have a great performance in a single pivot role, he's going to be compared to Seydou Keita, the Mali center back or the defensive midfielder from Barca Pass as well. So that same era. Those are going to be the Barcelona comparisons when he plays well. And again, that's because I think you know, players from Africa tend to be put in some kind of box, and that's why I even try to give metrics and understandings and comparisons that don't necessarily put players just in a box based on the country they of origin or that kind of thing. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And yeah, I mean, I will have to tune into a few Milan games before the end of this season, and hopefully again then Milan decides to play him and not sit him on the bench.
I think they will. I think he'd be stupid for Pioli not to play him, because we're trying to win here, right? So if he can help us win, it doesn't really matter, right? Like, he's leaving, great, but at least help us before you leave. Like, as long as he's, you know what, Sega's over, whatever. My question is, why couldn't this wait till, you know, end of May? Maybe, like, if they already have a deal in place, why can't the medical happen after the season's done and everything like that? But, like, what's the rush to do a medical right now with 8 games left? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but I guess that's just how football works. Like, a lot of players, I think, is it Sula in Germany? They already announced, like, in January that he's going to join Dortmund. Like, it's just very weird. I hate when that happens, but yeah, you should watch and you'll see exactly what kind of player he is. And he might have he has good games. Like, he can, I don't know if you guys have a set penalty taker these days, but he might come in and be that guy. He takes penalties. He's pretty good. He's only missed a couple.
It was a guy named Messi for a long, long time. So I think it's
Lionel,
not fully understood, but Memphis Depay has actually been the most prolific from the spot for Barca so far this year, as he's, you know, been in and out of the lineup. But so Luca, this was great. Thank you for this. Where can people find you in case I have any closet Milan fans who follow Milan as their second team?
Yeah, Dan, it was a really good opportunity. Thanks so much for having me on. Yeah, you can follow us at the Milan Guys on Twitter. You'll see our account there. We have Instagram and TikTok and everything like that. But Twitter's our main page. So if you're interested, just toss the follow. If you have any questions about Kessie, toss the DM and I can surely answer that for you.
All right. Thanks so much, Luca.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate the time.
And thanks to you, the listeners, as this wraps up another edition of the show. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod or at Hilton D13 for me. And you can join our closed Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast. Answer those questions. I let you in. And Patreon is how we keep making these shows. Always, always appreciate the help over there. You can also listen to these shows without the ads over there, so that's a little incentive to support the show. And we're on YouTube with the match reviews and bonus content as well at the Barcelona Podcast. And most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the show. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, Access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.